This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul Mission Control Deccant. Most importantly, you are you. You are here, and that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. Stay away from windows. Tonight, we are returning to a fascinating, troubling phenomenon. Since the fall of the USSR, oligarchs have exerted tremendous influence on almost every aspect of Russian politics, from industry to state actions. They run the largest companies. They're a new, unique version of robber barons, or they were. As we'll see, they are an increasingly endangered species. The official explanations for these deaths from the Russian government run the gamut from suicides to accidental deaths to family annihilations to death by toad poison. Pretty much everybody except Russia finds these official explanations don't hold up to scrutiny. We're not diving into this one alone, folks. We are immensely fortunate to be joined yet again with returning guest, the author, the filmmaker, the legendary conflict journalist, Jake Hanrahan. Jake, thanks for coming back on the show, man.
Hi, mate. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, dude, we're so glad that you're here, Jake. We've been listening through Sad Oligarch, and our heads are reeling. We covered this topic a little while ago in an episode a while back. And, you know, at the time, I think that was in 2022, guys, like right at the tail end when some of this was pretty fresh. And we just had, you know, some stuff online to go on, right? Like stuff that's being written in Sky News Australia and other outlets. As we get into this, I just want to ask, like, what kind of sources have you been using to delve into this topic and research it?
Yeah, well, that's been why there's so much work is having to go into this. So I'm working on this with my colleague and friend, Sergei Slipchenko. He's a Ukrainian journalist, dual national in Canada as well. He had to, you know, leave Ukraine when the war kicked off. I've worked with him over there in Ukraine, just really, really good lad, very, very thorough in what he does. So when I started looking into this, I realized, like, okay, I don't speak Russian. There's going to be a level where, you know, I just can't really get past. And then when you reach out to people from Russia, they're either very hard to contact or they're like, look, I'm not going on the record here. I'm sorry. I'm just not. It's not worth, especially now the war is on. I was like, right, well, this is going to be impossible. So I spoke to Sergei, and he obviously had sources or knew of, you know, vague people that we can speak to, and he speaks Russian and he knows how the networks work and he knows how the kind of social media and, you know, there are other ways around it. So yeah, really a combination of I don't want to get too much into it, but like kind of obscure Russian language sources, which you then have to like single-handedly corroborate every single thing and kind of work out, right, what is from the government, what is real, what is maybe rumor, you know what I mean? And it's been a very, very long process. So it's a real amalgamation of stuff. But there have also been like a lot of other reporters that have, you know, like yourselves, dipped into it, looked at it and been like, oh, there's another one here. Our job was kind of pulling them all together and trying to work out what the connections are. And that has proved very difficult, but it seems to be working, you know, it's doing well. There's a lot of stuff we could have put in that we were just like, we're not sure and we can't back it up, you know, but it kind of adds to everything. And it's been a very weird process. As you'll see as the series goes on, I mean, we're already seeing it now. There's a lot of connections to like oil and gas, you know?
Yeah. Well, Jake, first things first, I mean, I think a lot of people probably have a general idea of the answer to this, but in your estimation, or, you know, what would you describe an oligarch as and what makes it sort of a uniquely Russian thing?
That's a good question. And I don't think it is uniquely Russian, to be honest. I mean, we've called it a sad oligarch. Some of the people on the list that have died that we're looking to, they might not be necessarily like startup oligarchs. They might not fit into there. But it's a easier way for Western audiences to understand it. And it's a little bit of tongue-in-cheek because a lot of the Western sources will immediately call these people oligarchs, even if they're not really. You know, it's like, oh, Russian oligarch, those guys are so bad. And it's like, well, we have a very similar thing in the West. We just call it lobbying, right?
Agreed.
I don't see any difference, you know? I mean, my country right now, so Rishi Sunak, the current prime minister, his company firm just did like a $1 billion contract with an oil company. And lo and behold, this week he's announced, you know, new things, new measures that will help that oil company.
I wonder why.
Yeah, and it's like, well, that in itself, I mean, you know, a healthy country would have more focus on it. But, you know, Britain is what it is. And it's one of these things where I really, through this series, we don't want to do the typical like, haha, silly Russians, they're so weird. Look at what they do. It's like, no, every country does this. And as you see in the series, a lot of other countries are connected to this, you know, like Lukoil, for example, have just made record profits. Why? Well, because loads of their oil fields are running still in Europe with the help of EU countries, and they're making record profits when they're apparently not really meant to because of, you know, obviously the brutal invasion of Ukraine. So it ties everybody in. But sorry, to answer your question, for us, it's someone that has had these political influences, but they're a businessman. They're kind of meant to be outside of the politics of it, right? So for example, a lot of these people, they bought up shares in lucrative oil companies that are now half owned by the government, i.e. Gazprom. So they can then influence politicians through various shares that they have, through business dealings. Basically, politics, to be honest.
Right.
And an oligarch is like a very specific sample of that.
Yeah, and there's something that really resonates with me listening through here. You've nailed it already. You've anticipated one of my questions, Jake. Oligarchs, for anybody listening, are not a uniquely Russian phenomenon, despite the way the West may report it. There's a intensely disturbing pattern. You see this in one of the, I believe, the very first episode of Sad Oligarch. You say, you point out that in the space of less than a year, in 9 months, more than a dozen of these Russian oligarchs, or let's say people affiliated with the Russian kleptocracy, have died. Like the scientists, right? They have died under mysterious circumstances. We have to ask, you know, given your deep experience as a journalist and as the creative director of Popular Front, what inspired you to dedicate your time to this? I mean, you're a busy guy, my friend.
Yeah, I am. And then this project has really reminded me of that. You know, I might jump out of a window myself. But
No, please don't do.
It's been a very hectic one, but it feels really important, you know. I think it's really interesting. And I mean, the short answer is, when looking through this, I feel like it's a kind of insular way of showing the way the real inner workings of Russia works. When you realize how connected these things are to the government and how ruthless some of these murders or mysterious deaths are, it gives you, in my opinion, a much more realistic look behind the mask, behind the curtain. And again, every country's, you know, in my opinion, well, factually true, I think, every country's kind of leading government have skeletons in their closets or doing bad stuff or whatever. But this is a very unique phenomenon where this many people die with all pretty close affiliations this quickly. And as we already know, Russia kind of, in one of their words, like perfected the art of like accidental deaths, which were actually assassinations. So I guess that's the short answer. But I mean, it kind of came, it's weird why it came about. Like I was looking at something on 4chan, like not, I wasn't like browsing 4chan, but I was looking, I was looking for some really rude memes. No, I'm joking. I was just like, I was on there for like research and I just happened to come across this like list that some like 4chaner had made. Like it was about like six or seven of these. It was like Russian oligarchs die. And I was like, huh, like surely not, you know, like this is some 4chan nonsense. So I looked at it into it and I just kind of didn't really think about it. And then it was just on my mind. I was like, I want to know, like, is that actually like, is that 4chan nonsense or is that legit? Some of them, it was like, yeah, it was nonsense, but there was enough of them on the list as I was looking into it to be like, hang on, like, this is a bit weird now. And then as I got into it, I was like, this is fascinating. And my whole career, I've wanted to work out how to do like true crime, but in my style, if you like, the way I kind of do things. I'm not really into the kind of, you know, the more gratuitous shock kind of true crime stuff. I really like the old school kind of true crime. Like I used to be a big fan of this. Well, I am a big fan of this book called Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil.
Yes.
Yeah, right. Great book. And that was my introduction to true crime years and years ago. So when I see the new, what I consider kind of new true crime, I'm like, that's not really what it was meant to be about. It was actually quite journalistically heavy and, you know, it had a narrative, sure, but it was very kind of worthwhile reporting. And don't get me wrong, a lot of true crime is still, it's just not the ones I was seeing so often. So I was like, you know what, let me look into this and maybe this can be my like true crime project, if you like. And it's very topical and it exposes a lot within like the Kremlin. And yeah, it just kind of came together and I kind of realized like early on, I was like, this is going to be a big project, but it just felt like really worth it. Like the more we looked into it, each case was like, are you kidding me? Like, you know, when the coincidences get to the point where you're like, come on. Like, and when it hit that feeling, I was like, yeah, this needs, yeah, let's do this, you know?
Well, can we get into the fact that several of these people have died not in Russia or not in an even, you know, immediately close country to Russia? I'm thinking about Mikhail Watform, who died in Surrey or was found in dead in England. So like, when we're talking about these guys being investigated and you know, Russia taking an action potentially, maybe, do we think they are operating in England and in Spain?
I this is the thing. So I we say at the very start of the first episode, this is real life and there aren't really, we're not the police, you know,
so
we can't close any cases. So a lot of the deaths, you know, you have to say, well, look, this is weird. Here's what happened. And here's why it's an extreme coincidence if it is. And here's our theory. It's either A or B. And I think one theory could be, yeah, probably. And I think that there's a lot of evidence to suggest that's possible. I mean, it's already happened. I mean, look at Litvinenko. You know, they got him in Britain. He was poisoned, if anyone doesn't know. And they the Salisbury poisoning as well. I mean, you know, they literally killed the Brit by accident in the process of it. It's just, it's really not at all unlikely. You know, I think any government as powerful as Russia, any country as powerful as that, whether it be the US, Russia, whatever, they got people all over the place doing all sorts of stuff that we don't know about. And it doesn't always necessarily mean it's the government either. You know, like there's a lot of odd business dealings going on and they might say, hey, this guy's got to go. We don't like him. I know a guy we got, you know, and it is how it is. You know, a lot of it is just a lot of people falling downstairs and out of windows and murdering the whole families. And, you know, it's just a very big coincidence. But I think that's highly unlikely. And I do think probably some of them, there are some things within each one where there's like that bit of it might be a coincidence. And I fully went into this. Me and Sergio said, like, if we think that this is literally just a coincidence, we are going to flat out say it and we're still going to report it because you can't only look at the ones that are mysterious and dodgy, even if you boil it down and it's not. But every single one so far, we're 8 episodes in, has been extremely strange. You know, this next one that's coming, Dan Rappaport, he actually died in America. He died in DC, fell out a window. And, you know, we thought, I looked at this, I was like, right, this is going to be the one where it's like, yeah, this is just an accident. And then the more we looked into it, oh, he made his money in oil and gas in Russia. Oh, he was anti-Putin. Oh, he had to flee Russia. He used to have a nightclub where all the oligarchs went to. And it's like, I don't know. Oh, and another guy fell out of a window like a couple days before him. It's strange.
The silent killer windows.
Yeah, right. There's even a joke on, like, you know, Sergi was showing me at, like, kind of Russian social media and things like that. There's even a running joke of, like, you know, oh, you might catch a disease, like falling out of a window disease. You know, like, yeah, be careful, you might fall out of a window tomorrow. You know, and it's become a joke there.
It's the new defenestration, you know. It's
right,
the whole thing.
Right, yeah.
Mm. It's just a weird thing to me because we're talking about if let's say it was a Russian operation, any, you know, one of these deaths, right? And it happens in Russia. My assumption, and maybe this is wrong, is that you can control the narrative a lot more if the investigating body is more or less under your control, right? But then if you're in, you know, if you're in England or Britain, if you're in the US, if you're in Spain, you know, it does feel like maybe it's a bit harder to control the way the investigation goes, which, I don't know, just to me presents a problem that maybe they don't care. Maybe if it's an actual operation, they don't care if any links are made. I don't know.
I mean, polonium is a pretty specific poison.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
There's that. And that point brings us to something else that I really appreciate. The points that you and Sergi continually return to, there's objectivity in this reporting and in these investigations. And even when we as audience members are thinking, oh, yeah, no, Vladimir Putin had that guy killed, you're doing the ethical thing and saying we can bring in speculation, we can make connections, but we have to be absolutely maintaining our integrity when we look at these competing theories. You have early on an interview via a Russian translator with what I think we could call an actual oligarch who believes he's been targeted in the past for assassination. And in that interchange, you cite two competing theories about assassinations. Jake, I really like that you asked him one of the big ones. You said, are these the two theories are, one, these murders are standing out because the system, the operators are kind of on a downward spiral. They're getting sloppy, or they're purposely leaving breadcrumbs to say, hey, you can't prove it, but everyone knows this was Russia. What do you think about those theories?
I think the latter is, in my opinion, more likely. I think it's a mix of the both, to be honest with you. But I remember years ago, I read this great book. It's called Nothing Is Real and Everything Is Possible. And it's about this guy. He's like a Russian and British, you know, like I think his mother was Russian or his dad, whatever. And one was the mother or the dad was British. And he grew up in England. He grew up in Russia. And it's a really interesting book looking at the reality TV boom. So like Big Brother, right? So this guy worked in like the mid 2000s in England. And then for whatever reasons, he just wasn't getting any work. There were some issues, whatever. So he said, you know what? I'm going to go to Russia and do the same, work in the same industry. And through that lens, he really paints this picture of where the kind of cultural ideas are at regarding the state and the projection out to the rest of the world. And I thought that was very interesting. And to cut a long story short, the thing I really took from it, I'm not the smartest guy in the world, so maybe it wasn't the right thing to take from it. But the thing I took from it was when the Americans, let's say example, right? Because like Russia and America always mortal enemies, like the comic book enemy, like beef, right? So if the Americans say like, oh yeah, like we had to invade that country to defend America, right? The people go, yeah, we did. But when Russia say we had to go and, you know, invade that country to defend Russia, the Russians say like, yeah, we did. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like the American idea of it is like people starstruck and really believing the nonsense, whereas the Russian side of it is more, okay, we don't believe it, but we're cynical, we just got to believe it, whatever. You know what I mean? And I found that really interesting. And my point being, if you then take that kind of idea and match it to these assassinations, yeah, they might say, well, yeah, we did it. Yeah, we're letting you know you did it. What are you going to do? You know, we'll just deny it. And everyone goes, yeah, well, we know. That's why falling out a window is a joke over there. People aren't going, this is crazy. They're like, yeah, of course. You know what I'm saying? So,
right.
Yeah. I think that really speaks to it a lot. But that said, if you look at the Salisbury poisoning and stuff like that, there was actually also a huge catastrophe in regards to how they carried it out. It was clearly a mess. Now, maybe they just don't care that it was a mess. Or maybe it's because everybody is so kind of terrified of the guy at the top that the left hand is not shaking the right hand. You know what I'm saying? If you look at, I think it's quite clear with the invasion of Ukraine, clearly nobody wanted to actually tell Putin, like, this isn't going to work. And now we've got, a war that's ongoing for over a year and a half that, to be honest, okay, it's awful, but it's been also a disaster for Russia. It's made their military, which was once considered the second best in the world, look ridiculous. And I think that is part of it. I guess to answer the question, it's an amalgamation of everything, but I really think there's layers to it, but I think there's a cultural aspect of it as well.
We're going to pause here for a word from our sponsors, and we'll return with Jake Hanrahan.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it! Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
And we're back.
This is slightly unrelated, Jake, but I just want to get your opinion on it. I guess what happens in your brain when you read that the United States is sending cluster munitions to Ukraine?
Oh, boy. Yeah. One of the first things I ever wrote when I was really young, I was like 22, 23, I wrote this article for Vice. I wasn't there, I couldn't afford to go anywhere, but I wrote an article about the ongoing disaster that cluster munitions have had on Laos. And I believe it was the most heavily bombed country on earth per capita, yes. Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there was, I was talking with this NGO that basically demined the area. It was really interesting, actually. There were these like female teams of deminers. For whatever reasons, they hadn't been in work for whatever, and they just happened to be a really good workforce for it. It wasn't like woke cluster munition removal or anything, you know. It was like a real legitimate thing. And they were losing hands. Kids were losing hands all the time. Like, you know, and they looked like tennis balls, basically, some of these things. They picked them up, boom, hand is gone. And I was just thinking about that when I was reading that. And I, what really made me annoyed was that to say like, hey, this is actually ridiculous, put you on like people like you're pro-Russian. Like, no, are you crazy? No, I'm not. I just think that's really unwise, you know? And it really was quite stark to see where things have gotten, that people were going, it's fine, just give them cluster munitions. And it's firstly, they're not that effective. And secondly, no one was asking for them. And thirdly, history tells you it has always been a disaster. So it seems like a bad idea to me. You know what I mean?
100%. It just sounds good in political theater.
Right. Look what we've sent them. Like, okay, yeah. Do you know what those do? And you know, I mean, if anything, it's going to be nightmares for the Ukrainians for decades if they start showering these down. You know, yeah. I mean, it might work in the short term. But then when the people go back to those areas and all their kids start losing limbs years after the war, like what is happening in Laos, I mean, it doesn't make any sense. And some people say, oh, well, they're going to deploy them differently. They're not the same. Man, look into cluster munition. A cluster munition is a cluster munition. You know, it's once it's there, hidden in the soil or whatever, there is no strategic deployment.
And just to say it out loud, a cluster munition is essentially a bomb or something you would launch like a munition and you would see it explode if you were watching, you know, live leak back in the day. But in this case, it shoots out a bunch of other explosives that often some of them explode upon impact. Some of them, like you said, Jake, just kind of hang out until they get moved.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
it's like an incredibly evil version of glitter in that once you put it out somewhere, it's everywhere.
Yes. And if you clean it up, there's some left behind all the time.
Mm-hmm. This is something that ties back into these ideas, right? These consequences for things, you know, as you said earlier, Sad Oligarch is on, it's ongoing. There's a mid-season break. I believe, again, we just heard about the depth and difficulty of the investigation process here. And I do believe that good things take time. So this makes absolute sense. We would love to talk about some specific cases. We were just before we started recording, Jake, we were talking off air about what I think is one of the weirdest ones. A board member of Lukoil, another energy giant, Alexander Subotin, who officially died from a drug-induced heart attack during a psychedelic or shamanic ritual. For everyone listening, playing along at home, that's the official explanation of the Russian government, is that this guy went and did a spiritual journey kind of thing and had a heart attack. The other explanation is that he was purposely killed with poison from a toad. Can you tell us a little about that one?
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't even sound real, does it? When I send that to Sophie Lichterman, the producer, and she was like, are you serious? I was like, listen to it. just listen to it. You know what I mean? I was like, no, I actually am serious. Like it did sound ridiculous. And to be honest, as wild as it sounds, when I started out with that one and me and Sergio were investigating and talking about it, I thought this is actually the coincidence one. It is wild, but it's too wild to be real. And then by the end of it, I actually really kind of did a 180 on that. I'm it's up in the air, but it would have been a very good moment to get rid of him. You know what I mean? And this guy was a very heavy drinker, clear alcoholic, by all accounts. This isn't just like propaganda. Like a lot of, you know, people close to him were saying this. And it's almost as if they were like, ah. I mean, it'd be very easy if someone just found out like, hey, that guy there, he's quite easy to get. You know, he was on the board of Lukoil when Lukoil... Sorry, I should mention as well, the reason the Kremlin perhaps might be mad at Lukoil is because they're the second largest oil company. They're not state-owned, but they make billions for the Kremlin in taxes. And if you're making that kind of money, you're that kind of powerful in Russia, you know, the Kremlin has their hand in your back pocket. There's not much you can do. And basically, as soon as the war happened, as soon as Russia invaded Ukraine, Lukoil kind of put this statement out saying, we don't agree with this, we want peace. And it was, yeah, to the West, it might seem vague, but in Russia at the time, at that moment, less than a week after the invasion, it was actually like pretty heavy. It was like them saying, yeah, we're against Putin on this. It wasn't that explicit, but very easy to read between the lines. Now, does Lukoil care about Ukraine? Definitely not. I doubt. They care about their bottom line. They care about money. And Lukoil has a lot of dealings with the West. Like I said at the start, Lukoil is making huge profits now off the back of being one of the few oil refineries still able to operate Russian oil in Europe. And okay, that makes sense. Now they've made record profits. But at the time, the writing was on the wall. Everything's gone to disaster. People are getting sanctioned. One of the heads of Lukoil had to step down because he was getting sanctioned later on by Britain and various other places. So they probably thought, right, we're going to lose a ton of money right now. And these are very rich people with very high overheads and a lot of ego. You know, they built this company up and, it, you know, it's absolutely gigantic. They account for something like more than 2% of all the world's oil. Now, that might not sound like a much, but when you realize, like, you know, the amount, like millions of barrels of oil a day in various countries going through, that's a hell of a lot of oil. So they're a huge company, and he was on the board, and he dies. And then another guy, the president, he dies, falls out of a window at hospital. It doesn't make sense. It's just very big coincidences. Now, with Sobotkin, I feel like, maybe someone said, okay, well, this guy, there's one we can get rid of. He was on the board. We don't know the insider info. Maybe he was instrumental in putting this statement out. They said, right, he's got to go. All right, well, what's he doing? I don't know, man. He goes to see shamans, which we explained in the episode is not that unusual for the kind of rich and wealthy in Russia. So they might have said, all right, well, he's going to a shaman. Yeah, but he's going to like this weird Western shaman that's like an amalgamation of like other shamanism. And they're actually, you know, they're already involved with various kind of pretty high-ranking people in Russia, like pop stars and stuff like this. Okay, well, we'll just switch the poison or we'll just lean on them and tell them to give them this. It would be actually fairly easy now you look at it. Okay, it sounds outrageous, but actually it will probably be one of the easier ones to do. Also, the guy's an alcoholic. He went there to try and get off booze. People aren't going to question it that much, you know? And he's taking frog venom. Like he went for it. He wanted it. You know, it wasn't like he was dragged there. He went for it anyway. And actually, when we looked into these two so-called shamans, they got a lot of weird, dodgy dealings anyway. There was already a woman that launched a kind of investigation or tried to launch an investigation into them because she said that they threatened to kill her and they attacked her. And in this basement, there's all this weird stuff that they have. And that was also corroborated by somebody else. And the police in Russia just didn't do anything about it. It just kind of went away. So that in itself is kind of curious, right? I don't know if we actually mentioned that because I think it was a little bit too tenuous for me at the time. But yeah, that happened. And yeah, weird, very weird, you know, a very weird situation.
Well, let's continue talking about motive because I'm really interested here to figure out, like, it's not about money, right? Because these individuals who die, they're going to give that money to, you know, family members, or it's going to go down the chain somewhere.
Well, there is some circumstances in Russia, which we will get into, I think, later in this series, because things have changed quite a lot and it's still kind of murky. It's a little bit unclear where it's at. But there is some circumstances in Russia where if your whole family dies or is killed, your money goes to the state. So bearing in mind that in the last 12 months, there have been 3 family annihilations. However, 2 of them, there are 2 remaining kids that just happened not to be there at the time. So maybe they got the money. But yeah, it's a weird one. It's something we're looking into a little bit further. But it's a tricky one. I don't know. I mean, even so, I mean, 2 billion, like, it's not nothing to the Kremlin. They don't need $2 billion. You know what I mean? So I looked at that as well. And at the start, me and Sergi were talking about this. And I was like, oh, it's that. And then I was like, hang on. The Kremlin doesn't need $2 billion. What do they care about $2 billion? You know, okay, it's a lot of money. Sure. They would prefer it. But I don't think they were like, yeah, we're so strapped for cash. Let's kill everybody and accumulate the wealth of them. There's other ways to do it, I think.
And there's something else here too, that I think the family annihilation part stood out, and that speaks to the inherent true crime aspect of what you have to do in the journalism here, because these are crimes, even if they are portrayed as accidents. It might surprise a lot of people to know that the idea of falling down stairs or windows, death from a fall from a height, is a known and proven method of assassination in intelligence circles. With this being a known method of assassination and with, you know, intelligence circles being kind of rarefied air, did you have any conversations with non-Russian intelligence or anything like that to get their take on this?
Well, the problem with that is I spoke to people, not like intelligence agencies, but people that know about that kind of thing. And I just feel like it's very much in their interest to go, yeah, Russia's killing everybody. Like, because, you know,
boogeyman. Right.
And it's someone that works in an intelligence agency. It doesn't want to give you a straight answer. They want to influence what you do. My work, I really try to avoid all that kind of thing. Even analysts, sometimes a lot of analysts are in bed with various intelligence agencies, and that's not like weird loony Twitter conspiracy. It's very true. A lot of universities, a lot of think tanks that are independently funded, you'll find out, along the pipeline, they're getting money from the US government or whatever. So to be honest, I really wanted to kind of avoid that. I kind of didn't want to bring it in at all, because I just feel like it's very easy for people to see this as my team's the best and just be like, look what those evil Russians are doing, you know, like very stereotypical. And I really wanted to avoid that side of it, because I just wanted to be like, look, this is happening, this is this. It doesn't need to be a part of this football match of supporting this side and that side that is so popular on the internet. If I'd have done that, it'd probably been maybe a little bit more popular, because people love that kind of thing. But luckily it's done really well anyway. It was like at the top of the charts like the first 2 weeks. I was happy about that. But I didn't want it to turn into like that kind of thing. And any intelligence people you speak to, they have a vested interest in doing that, even if they're retired. You know, once you're in that game, you're never retired, I don't really think. And I just felt like, yeah, they're gonna say this, that, and the other. Oh yeah, it's probably Russia doing this. And I didn't really feel like there's anything in there that they could add that we weren't getting from our own stuff. And the best way was to look at it historically, you know, like on one of the episodes we had scientist Yovana Matsic. She was saying about how the Soviet Union perfected, they even gave it like a name, perfected how to kill people by accident with poisons and stuff like that. And I mean, that itself speaks a lot louder than I think an analyst with ties to the kind of DC circle joke being like, oh yeah, they're all monsters, you know.
Right. And then that's another thing that I do want to shout out. The experts that you speak with are not the rah-rah, go my team kind of intelligence hooligans, as no. It were. Yeah, the one thing that stood out to me is when you and Sergi are talking about a very specific type of knife that is found in a murder scene. And then I was wondering, in full transparency, I was wondering, well, how are they going to go with this? Like, how much are we going to go with the knife? And by God, you guys hunted down experts on knife history of these specific blades. Could you tell us a little bit about that? Because that also is, I think, investigation plus true crime there.
Yeah. Well, for me, believe it or not, that side of it has been easy because of Popular Front. So my platform, we focus on very niche details of modern warfare and underreported conflicts. And we're like the anoraks of the war reporting. You know, our strap line has always been no frills, no elitism. And our idea was we wanted to break down all these annoying barriers that like journalists who think they're so important like to put up around this industry. And we wanted to bring in all these nerds and be like, hey, come with us. Like, you know, there's someone for everything. And I was asking around like our network. I mean, the team is, I don't know, there's like what, 10 of us, but the network is like hundreds, thousands, you know what I mean? So I was asking about like an other kind of network. I was like, is there anyone like a, you know, kind of, it's a bit weird, but is anyone an expert on knives? Like 10 people were like, yep, me. So I was like, okay. And we had like, in the end, it was really useful because, okay, we spoke to like one guy and we went with what he had, but we were able to cross-reference it with like three other really, really good kind of experts on knives. And through all three of them, I was going to put them together. I was like, now let's not talk to each one. Let's compartmentalize each one and then cross-reference it that way so they're not influencing each other or whatever. And through that, I feel like it was like a blind study, I guess, if you like in a very crude way. And through that, we really narrowed it down. And that's how, in the end, it became obvious, like, it's this company. It's from here. It's from here. And I really... I put that all in the episode. It's episode one, that, because I wanted to show the kind of real time workings of it, because that is such an interesting part of it. And it really, I don't want to gatekeep the investigation. I want to go, here's how we did it. And then anyone else, if they want to learn from that, they can, rather than like, oh, our secret sources. And, you know, there's right, obviously people we can't talk about because of the tense situation in Russia. There's people that we, you know, I actually spoke to a guy yesterday who is kind of a Russian career criminal, to be honest. And he was useful to talk to. And he was like, I can never go on the record about this, but here's what I think about this.
Like a vore? Like a thief in law?
Not quite. Okay. I know what you mean, but not quite. A little bit more higher, I think. I mean, he's a businessman, but, you know, he's quite open about his, he's a naughty boy. And anyway, but that, yeah, that, but that was really useful, you know, and I was like, well, how can we explain that? And some things you can't, sure, we can say who we spoke to, but we can't get him to explain something, and I can't say it because then it will expose who he is. So there's a lot of really difficult things, but where we can, we try and say like, hey, this is how we worked it out.
And with that, we're going to take a quick break, hear a word from our sponsor, but we'll be right back for more Sad Oligarchy.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it on. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
And we've returned.
If I could shift gears slightly to the whole scientific community aspect of it, it reminds me of, like, you know, Chernobyl, for example, where there are scientists within the Russian government who want to tell people about this, you know, nuclear meltdown. But the government is basically like, no, this didn't happen. And it didn't happen because we say it didn't happen. And that is the line that we need everyone to follow. And if you don't, then, you know, woeful things will happen to you. And also, there was a really great documentary on Vice, and I've read about it elsewhere, about this city in Russia called Asbest, where they actually mine asbestos, and it's, you know, people get sick and have cancer, but no, they don't. That's not true. Right, don't worry about it. Everything's fine. And in the doc, they interview scientists who say that. They're scientists. Say, no, it's fine. It's totally safe. Everything's okay. And anyone that says otherwise, you know, obviously would be terrified to speak on the record, would be in fear of their life. Can you just speak a little bit about that, like, kind of tradition of information control and that leads to things like this?
Yeah, I mean, it's not Soviet Russia. It's not as bad as that. And there are adversarial papers, even now, against Putin that are, maybe let's not say they're allowed to freely operate, but they do operate. And, you know, Medusa's an excellent one, although they did get closed down in Russia and they're now been accused of being, like, foreign agents. So maybe that's a bad example. But it's very restrictive. But before the war, it was a little less so. And now with the Ukraine war, it's just a different fever pitch. You know, you can get like 15 years in prison for just being against the war or like organizing a peaceful protest of like two people. Ironically enough, Britain actually has a very similar law now called the police crime sentencing law,
right,
which is crazy. And it's like akin to like Russian or Turkish style authoritarianism. And everybody's like, this is fine. But anyway, Western values for you. But yeah, so they, since the war, it got a lot worse. Like any of those weird laws that you'd maybe been like able to skirt around, or as long as you don't say that this thing, they'll let you go. They're kind of really more hardly, like more firmly enforced now, if you know what I'm saying. They were always there, but the journalists, they knew, okay, we can say this, but we'll draw the line here. We have to just, maybe let's not say he's corrupt. Maybe let's say someone close to him was involved in the corrupt. You know, there were ways around it. Unfortunately, self-censorship, but we have that. That's a part of the journalism industry now, especially even in the West. You know, like my platform, we have to censor everything we do. Well, we don't censor what we do. That's why we're now censored by social media companies. So I don't think it's like just Russia that has this, but it's Russia that it has it in the most kind of easily understandable form, if that makes sense. Where, like you said, people literally have to lie, barefaced lie on camera, depending on which role they're in. Now, your everyday man on the street can go, yeah, that the scientists are lying, yeah, people are dying, they're probably going to be fine. But the scientists involved can't. You know what I'm saying? And if he, well, he can, but he might find out in 6 months that he's fired or he dies or something. So it's a very weird situation right now. And it's not just like from the top. There's all different factions fighting about stuff. It's not always necessary information. It's not just that the info's out there. It's how will that affect my bottom line for this company? Oh, they've told them this. Okay, well, then we have to kill him because we're not going to get the you know, stuff like that, or we have to silence him. So it's, I think some people see it as this like column of evil at the top that stamps down on everyone. It's not quite that. It's just, okay, don't get me wrong, like, you know, censorship is awful anywhere it is. But my point is it's endemic in all different parts. And it's like, okay, well, we need to protect our business interests, so we need to stop him saying that. Oh, well, if he says that, he's going to make this guy look bad, and I'm not going to be able to do that deal. Or, you know, and it then it's like a domino effect, and it's from the top, but it's everywhere.
Different stakeholders, right?
Yeah, exactly. And it's almost worse like that, right? Because you don't know where it's coming from. Yes, the state has an iron grip, but a lot of other people do too.
To your point about a lot of this stuff not being uniquely Russian, I mean, let's not live under any illusions that the U.S. government doesn't assassinate inconvenient people.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Or,
yeah.
I mean, come on. It's just a little less brazen, or they hide it a little better or whatever.
Well, the idea is America doesn't do that anymore. That's the idea. It's like, come on.
Okay.
In 20 years, there'll be a report coming out like, oh, look what they did when they said they didn't do it anymore.
Once the right guy has had his fancy pants state funeral,
right.
The expose rolls out. There's something else here that I think a lot of our listeners have already connected just from our conversation. But let's talk about it a little more directly. So what we're seeing is internal chaos. Post USSR collapse, there was a new regime, a new era. I did drop the word kleptocracy, which some people might object to, but I'm right. There was a sort of unification of things, but this changed. There was a fever pitch, and chaos became widespread domestically. I think this new regime got upended. When the war in Ukraine goes hot, we see an uptick in the deaths of these oligarchs, these associated people, even, you know, unto academic scientists, etc. And we have to ask, is there a correlation there? Did the uptake, like you mentioned, Luke Oil's statement, right? Did the uptake in conflict, the beginning of the Ukraine conflict, did that trigger the deaths of these oligarchs? Or like, how related are these deaths?
That's a great question. I don't really have a clear answer. I think it's been used as an opportunity to do it, if it is done like that. And I think also it's brought up some issues that were already there that have kind of had the nerves bared out. And so people are like, we're at the point now, we have to deal with this right now. I think that's happened. And there is some people that said, oh, well, why are you doing this? It's been going on for ages. It's just, you know, it just seems worse. Now people are looking at Russia because of the war. That's not true. There's never been a correlation like this. It's that many? No, not like this. It's like when people say, oh, well, the world has been warming up and getting colder ever since time began. Yeah, that's true. But then look at how fast that has happened in the last 10 years. Okay, it's very clear there's a difference. So without the context there, it's kind of, it seems like, oh, well, this has always been happening. But with the context of like, no, not this quickly, not this many, not this closely connected in the last 9 months, in the last year, and so many, 3 family annihilations in the space of 9 months, all people connected. When I spoke to the expert on family annihilations, I didn't tell her that to the end. And she was like, what? Nah. She's like, I've never heard of that happening. And it's an extremely rare situation. So I think it's a bit of both. I think maybe more attention is on it. Maybe the West are paying attention a little bit more because of the war. But at the same time, there's more happening, I think, because of the war.
Family annihilation, I mean, that just seems like just the most aggressive retribution to make an example out of someone.
Right.
Or is there something further? You said you were looking into the idea of the state getting the money, but in the examples that you saw, there were a couple kids that survived. What do you think? Like, is family annihilation just like, this is us really making an example out of you? Is it about what people in the family know? Like, what do you think?
I think if it's someone came in and killed the whole family and then staged it to look like murder-suicide. If it's that, I believe it's, like you said, the latter, to make an example. Look what we'll do to you. It's very mafia-like, right? It's
oh, yeah.
You think about it, oh, I can't believe that. But if you put it into the context of like, well, look, this is like a mafia, which is what oligarchs essentially are, you know, they were connected to, and all of them kind of came about through like a very murky Wild West period within the collapse of the USSR. A lot of them were criminals, you know, a lot of them got their tokens, got their money through criminality. Yeah, definitely. Like, very mafia-esque thing to do, right? Kill everybody. Now you'll learn. Like, you know, like, who's going to come against us? Okay, if someone says, oh, I'll kill you, all right, well, I'll take the risk. If someone says, I'll kill your family, yeah, that's a next level, right? Like, it's the most precious thing. And I think that, but then the other side of it could be, well, maybe this is a coincidence. Maybe, you know, the kind of people that do this stuff are generally very wealthy, power-hungry men. And maybe it just happened to be that 3 of them, all within the same kind of circuit, happened to do this.
Sure.
All within the space of 9 months. And that's
buy a
possible.
Lottery ticket.
Right. It's possible, but I think it's more likely. Well, I don't want to say it's more likely, but I think it's also possible that it was a sign. And I don't necessarily think, yeah, the Russian government went, yeah. So, like, it's not like Putin sat there stroking a cat going, kill the whole family, you know,
right.
Like, it's not like that. I think it's just various oligarchy circles, mafia-esque groups have said, right, make an example out of that guy.
And it'd be an open secret. Like, it's not like they need to leave a calling card.
Right.
People would just, you know, if you know, you know.
Yeah,
right?
And if you talk to, like, maybe some of these people involved in, like, oligarchy circles, they consider it like, oh, yeah, that's definitely.
That's what that was.
That's what that was. They're letting us know. They're letting him know.
Yeah.
And, okay, you can't really take their word as gospel, but that's what they see as, yeah, often.
All right, just to stay on organized crime for a second, and this is a potentially really dumb question, Jake, so here it comes. One of my favorite movies that's come out in a couple of years is this Bob Odenkirk action movie called Nobody. And
yeah, worst film I've seen in a long time.
Oh, come on, I loved it. It was so much fun.
Zero stars.
Are you serious?
A stain on his career, I believe, yeah. No,
oh, no.
I hated it so much.
Oh, yeah. No, I loved it. I loved seeing him do that. I think that's really where the joy came from. But in that movie, one of the major plot points is this thing called an obshack. I don't know how to say it correctly.
Yeah,
obsec.
Yeah.
No, it's like an obshack.
Obshack. It's obshack, which is like umbrella organization for moving money in a criminal way.
Well, in that movie, it's weird. It takes it as in the actual giant amount of money that is, you know, made on in black markets in some way or illegally, and it's kept somewhere. Have you seen anything like that in your research, like something that exists in the criminal underworld of Russia?
I mean, it doesn't, not really in that sense. I think, I mean, that is a real thing, yeah, but it not really like that. I mean, it's not, that was a, it's like every Russian in that film is like just finishes eating a baby before they speak. You know, it's one of those like ridiculous caricatures. It's not like that. I mean, everyone has these pools of dirty money, hidden money. I mean, Putin himself is worth like 100 billion or something. How? You know, how?
It's off the books, though.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Off the books, right. You know, he doesn't make that. Yeah, like that's not his. You know, they've all got these various schemes, but, you know, everyone does. I mean, everyone. I mean, look at the Panama Papers. You know, that wasn't just Russia by any means. You know, if you're a multi-millionaire involved in these kind of businesses, you got some dirty money somewhere, you're doing something illegal. It's how it works. You know, it just is how it is. And you get away with it. You know, you completely get away with it. There is, I think one person got prosecuted directly off the back of the Panama Papers, maybe more than that. But it's compared to how many people were in there, barefaced, caught, red-handed, basically nothing happened. And they know.
Of course.
Know. Yeah.
Well, consequences are... for the peasants, right? As ever.
Right. Yeah. And depending on which political side of the room you're on, you know, you either get, I don't know, arrested or you get a podcast. It's very much who you're it's very much who you're kind of like involved with in all countries. I'm not talking about anyone specific.
Sure.
It's just like anywhere you are, you know.
You're on fire with the quotables today, man.
I'm just saying, you know, depending on where you are, depending on who you upset or who you make happy, you're gonna come out of it well or maybe fall out a window.
That's true. And there's something else that you talk about. You and Sergi look at something that I think a lot of people in the West have forgotten about. When these deaths occur, one other aspect of this that lends credence to the idea that these are not a series of ridiculous, you know, Rube Goldberg-esque Final Destination accidents, but purposeful homicides. One thing that makes it, that really lends authority to that, is you talk about this almost Stalinistic tendency of the Russian government to scrub these guys from history. Like, to what did you say? Like, the record of their roles in places or careers is that really happening, and to what extent?
Yeah, that is happening more. Like, we saw, so one guy that was, you know, made a load of money for Gazprom, his whole career there, he died in a suicide, which in itself was weird. Guys from Gazprom security turned up in black jeeps and literally pushed the police out of the crime scene. So the Gazprom security somehow had more authority than the cops. And his records were removed, like, basically, like, within 24 hours of him being dead from Gazprom records.
Wow.
And at the time, this was at the start of these kind of killings, and at the time, the Gazprom actually gave a statement. They said, oh, well, we thought it might make his family upset. No, I think it would much more likely make the family upset that he was basically wiped from the record of the place he worked at for decades and was very proud to work. And then the scientist, that was before he died, actually, but like a lot of his records started getting removed because he was removed by his post from a guy that really had no place being there. He was not qualified. He cheated on his exams. And for some reason, the government put him in charge. And then this other fella, his stuff was removed. And then, you know, a year later, he falls down the stairs and dies. And then another thing that is making the series hard is we've noticed as these things progress, a lot less is said about it in the media in Russia. At the start, there was actually, even the Russian media would be like, oh, this is kind of weird. You know, this is weird. And now it's just like, as it goes on, we have like a timeline that we work from. Well, I might release that, actually. It might be useful for other people that are looking into this. But we have a timeline. Yeah, and as you see, as it gets on, the more that happen, the less and less and less details go out there. You know, and I think maybe someone has said, hey, yeah, okay, we get it. We're doing this if they're doing it. But, you know, we need to not make this so obvious, perhaps. I don't know. Or just because of the brain drain from Russia during the war, reporting has got worse. That is also possible, you know. But I don't think that's what it is. I think it's, like I said, the more that happened, the less details seem to be out there.
That was going to be one of my last questions for you, Jake. I think it's Sergei Protasenya, who was in Spain with his family, and they all died. Just... I haven't seen anything on that since the initial reporting, and I just wonder, like, if you've got any updates since even making your episode.
I mean, the police have just kind of said, like, look, we think it was as it is, and that's it, really. It's very tricky. I mean, everything's kind of open. Like, even this new one we're doing, Dan Rappaport, the police in Washington, D.C. closed the case, But even they said, look, if any tips are out there, we're very happy to open it up again. You know, the cause of death was undetermined, so we don't know, what, you know, but I don't know. It's, and people seem to think, well, oh, well, that means then it's actually, you're just jumping to conclusions. Well, no, if you actually look at how many murders really go unsolved, there's loads in America alone. I think Baltimore's like solving murder rate is like 30% or something crazy like that. So yeah, it happens all the time. So it's not unusual that the police just go, ah, we don't know, close it. And that's with murders. Someone that looks like a suicide, it's, you're even more likely to just go, ah. You're not going to go, yeah, guys, let's get our small squad of officers embroiled in an international plot, perhaps, and, you know, direct all our resources. Nah, he fell out a window, he's dead, whatever. You know, it is how it is. So it's nothing like Insidious that, oh, they've been told to drop it. No, it's just the way it is.
It's closing the books, right?
Exactly.
It's resources versus the system. Yeah. And there's another related question here, too, about safety. And it reminds me a bit of some of our earlier conversations when we're talking about QAnon and conflict journalism with you a number of years ago. It's no secret, Jake, that you have been in some pretty hairy situations before, you know, and you are familiar with that. That is a world in which you have lived. Have you or any of your team heard from direct representatives of aspects of Russian governance? Have you or your team ever felt that your own personal safety was at risk as a result of these investigations?
Not really. I mean, people did say to us, oh, you're not worried about this. Oh, you're a madman. Like, why are you doing it? Like, I don't think, firstly, the Russian government has probably no idea about this podcast series. Secondly, they probably wouldn't. Why would they care? You know, if they're doing this, or whoever is doing it, have done it so sloppily that someone like me is able to, like, basically work it out with my friend. Yeah, they're probably not going to care. You know, if anything, they might be like, oh, I'm glad someone's seen our handiwork. And if it's all a coincidence, they're going to care even less. They're going to be like, look at this fool. Like, this is, we're not even doing this. And he's, you know, put two and two together and got 10. So I don't really think, you know, I think people like me, it's not really, it's fine. I mean, Litvinenko wrote a book called Blowing Up Russia, in which he kind of proved that Putin, pretty much almost directly from the top, from his office, were orchestrating the apartment bombings in Russia, which then led to the invasion of Chechnya and all of that stuff and the wars that started. So that obviously is going to be a big deal. You know, that is obviously going to get you poisoned. Me being like, yeah, I think these weird coincidences, we're just putting the information together and, you know, we have various this and that. Yeah, I think it's probably fine. I mean, I'm sure that if we manage to get some kind of, like, I don't know, you know, like on camera of Putin, you know, dropping some frog venom in your martini, like maybe then I'd be in danger, but it's just not how it works. And I do think, you know, people do have a tendency to blow things out of proportion, especially when it's Russia related. If I was Russian, I'd be in a lot more danger, I think, you know, and Sergei's not Russian either. And that's why we're not having actually any people in country on the record, because someone was like criticizing me for that. And I was like, yeah, do you know what will happen to them? They're going to be in serious trouble. I'm not saying they'll get killed, but they're going to be in trouble. It's not, we're not in the process of, yeah, well, that will make our podcast even better. No, we're not getting people in trouble like that, you know? So we even had someone like we were talking to, and in a completely unrelated thing, but she was, well, it's for this series, but she was telling us that her cousin was, like, you know, anti-war, and she was a little bit worried about even giving us information about some stuff that she knew about. And as we were talking, she found out he'd, like, been arrested, you know what I mean? Nothing to do with us, it was just because he'd been found, you know, they were looking for him. So even being anti-war is getting people arrested. It's just not something we're going to do to be like, oh yeah, for the sake of the podcast, let's put people at risk. But, you know, we've had some really interesting conversations with people. I have specifically with people in Russia that, I don't know, there's a whole different side to the place, you know. It's not everybody is even for this war. Not everybody is just living with it and thinking it's okay. There's a lot of people there that really hate this stuff, you know. And, you know, they can't just exit. It's not that simple. So Yeah. But no, I don't think we're in danger. I mean, I say that if you find out, like, oh, yeah, Jake Hanrahan fell out of a window soon.
Oh,
I didn't fall. I'm not that clumsy, you know.
We got you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Dude, we haven't even asked you about Wagner. Like, I can't believe we didn't talk about that. Are you serious?
Yeah, of course.
Prigozhin and all that stuff. Like, my God, dude. But
how crazy was that?
So this is where we know that we're onto something as a group, and we're counting you, fellow conspiracy realist here. The show Sad Oligarch is ongoing. Jake, Matt, Noel, I think we've got to pull in Jake to talk about Wagner at some point as well, you know, Niger and so on.
Well, maybe could we give a few minutes to it now?
I mean,
when that thing was reported, it was just so confusing. Like, even when we first were reading about it, it was like, what are they doing and why? Is this like a flex? Like what exactly? Can you describe that situation as you perceived it, Jake, and any updates that you think are pertinent? It was just such a bizarro situation.
Did you hear that?
It's convoluted as hell.
Up until they actually started shooting, I was like, this is an op. Like, this isn't real. This is some kind of nonsense. I still think that to some degree, but I don't know. There's people a lot like smarter than me that will be able to work that out. But I think it's, I don't know. They're doing all weird stuff in Belarus right now. They seem to have just been allowed to like continue operating. They're talking about sending more people to Russia, to Africa right now. There's a lot of Wagner in Russia. Wagner going from Belarus to Africa that were previously in Russia. So I think it's, I don't know. You're going to have to, I think in the next year, a lot more of that will become more apparent. But right now it's, I don't even want to really think, like, say what I think, because it's so confusing. I don't know, you know, but I don't, I definitely don't think it's,
but
as
it's
straightforward
something.
As it seems.
Yeah.
It's something very, very odd. I personally think this is maybe orchestrated between Prigozhin and Putin, actually. I think there's whole play going on. But maybe people are a lot more clued up on it than me. Of like, don't be ridiculous, and they're probably right. But who knows?
Well, glad it wasn't just me that thought the whole thing was bizarro world. Like, I'm like, what is this? I don't understand. So,
speaking of confusing,
we'll definitely keep
things,
an eye on it together. Yeah.
With your work on Q clearance, are you super stoked about Tuesday, November 5th, 2024? That's the presidential election here in the U.S.
It's the election.
Yeah. Aren't you super stoked about the next election in the U.S.?
No, I'm not really. I don't know. I kind of got tired of it.
Wow, got it.
It's making a comeback over here, Jake.
That's a very
they're
American
making the rounds again.
Say.
Yeah.
Being tired of the election is a very American thing to say, Jake. Yeah. I think that counts as your passport.
After the Q clearance stuff, I just zoned out.
It's
fatigue for sure. But then there was such a lull, you know, like it's like, okay, everything's gone away. Everything's normal-ish, you know, not normal really. But now it's like he's on TV, he's on all these podcasts saying all this crazy shit, like he's going to run even if he's in prison. And honestly, what would stop him? Running from prison?
There's no law.
Yeah. So long as he's got jokes, like,
there we go.
Right.
He's got all the jokes.
Here's my fix. I know we got to get out of here. Here's my fix.
Yeah,
though,
I'll go in a sec. Sorry.
Yeah, for the U.S. budget, make the trial pay-per-view. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
Treat it like the theater it is.
I'd pay for
that. So Jake Hanrahan, the new show ongoing is Sad Oligarch. However, this is one. This is only one facet of the many, many projects that our pal Jake does. Jake, can you tell folks where to learn more about not just Sad Oligarch, but the continuing work of Popular Front and where people can follow and or contact you?
Yeah. Thanks very much. I mean, if they just go to my site, so it's just jakehanrahan.com, H-A-N-R-A-H-A-N. They'll just see links to everything there. Same with Popular Front. The best way, probably for the Popular Front, if you go to popularfront.cc, it's just like a list of links to everything we do. We make documentaries, we've got podcasts, we've got a new magazine has just come out now. We're really proud of that. So yeah, we've got everything going on. We're independent media platform focused solely on war and conflict, but we come at things from a little bit more of a different angle. We kind of, from the point of view of the people, I like to say, as opposed to governments. put it that way. And we're not like hyper political or anything. Like, people always want to label us as this, that. No, we just don't like people's heads being trodden on, and that's it. You know.
Nice. Thank you so much. Thanks for being
again
here,
for your time, man. Yeah.
Thanks, guys. Really appreciate it. Sorry, I just got a dash.
And that was our pal. That was our pal Jake. Every time, you know, every time we talk with Jake, he's in the middle of something crazy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he always comes to us audio only, probably because he's somewhere that doesn't even have, like, you know, the bandwidth to transmit video. You hear your pops and crackles here and there. I mean, it really does feel like you're talking to somebody who is on the inside. And he is on the inside, whether physically or just his brain. He's a really smart dude and really thoughtful, and always a pleasure spending time with him.
I talked to him one time, and I was like, just checking in. We're just chatting. We're like, hey, man, how's it going? He's like, I'm in these French protests.
Yeah.
I said, oh, cool. Like, I fell asleep trying to put on a pair of pants.
Well, I mean, you know, obviously Brexit has made this a little more difficult, but that is one benefit of living in Europe, is like you can bounce around between all of these widely politically different places and culturally different places, and, you know, be able to just really see this incredible swath of humanity. Whereas here in the U.S., sure, there's changes across the country, but it's a little more homogenous overall. But really amazing that someone with the smarts of Jake is able to do that.
Yeah, man, guys, I'm sorry. I'm still reeling from the whole family annihilation aspect of some of this episode and just this topic. It really, like, put me in a dark space.
I'm reeling on the way you shut down your favorite movie of the year.
I know.
That was painful.
It's a stain on his career.
Damn.
I thought that gave me.
It wasn't high art or anything, but it was a fine little jaunt of a picture.
That gave me a laugh. These are the kind of people that we like to hang out with, folks. The people that are top in their fields. Still, as you can tell, Jake is an incredibly humble dude, puts himself in a lot of situations, and does this to bring stories that the public ordinarily might not see without being controlled. And if you listen back to this conversation, spoiler, you're going to hear a lot of threads that we referred to, that Jake referred to, that are rabbit holes all their own. So do feel free to dig in. I gotta say, there's so many questions we didn't get to. I'm glad we talked a little bit about Wagner, but I really want to hear what he's talking about with Niger, because you guys have been looking into that, right? France said they're fine to intervene and help out.
The French can't fight.
Oh, they're they actually really good.
I'm just joking.
They're nasty.
I'm joking.
But yeah,
I'm joking.
They
fight dirty.
Well, yeah. they're always glad to provide democracy to their biggest source of nuclear material. It's what we could say. I don't know. All right, we've got a little long, but we hope you enjoyed this one, folks. We hope you tune in for future episodes and conversations like these. We're going to be looking at a U.S. naval cover-up. We're going to be talking about aspartame. We got a lot of stuff going on, and we also recently got a great letter from law enforcement about why celebrities tend to have better investigations into their deaths. Tune in to find all of that and more. Help us. You're the most important part of the show. Give us those new leads. Take us to the edge of the rabbit hole. You can find us all sorts of places. Probably not in Russia. I don't think we're going to get through customs. But you can find us online.
You sure can, at the handle Conspiracy Stuff on YouTube. And yes, that's what's called Twitter. Conspiracy Stuff. Also Facebook. Excuse me. I think Facebook is still Facebook. And also you can find us at Conspiracy Stuff Show on Instagram and TikTok.
Do you like using your phone to call people and leave voicemails? Well, we've got an opportunity for you. 1-833-STDWYTK. You've got 3 minutes, say whatever you'd like, give yourself a cool nickname, and let us know if we can use your name and message on the air. If you'd rather send an email, hey, we've got that too. We are
conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.